Well, good morning, brethren. It's good to see you all this morning. What a pretty nice crowd we have this morning. So, another beautiful, sunshiny day. Got pretty cool last night, but, you know, a nice day. Thank you, Pam, for special music. It was a nice, soothing, relaxing song. Helped me to relax. Appreciate that. I'm going to give you a quick update on Judy and my last year. I am still driving school bus. And I think, this is the last year. This is the last year. I'm doing 1 hour in the morning and every 5 days a week. And whenever anybody needs a substitute in the afternoon, which has been about two or three times a week lately, so I'm still kind of busy with that, but I'm going to be out of it after the summer comes. I retired from tour bus driving this summer. I didn't do it. So that loosened up my summer a little bit and got a little bit more done. Still not getting enough done, of course. But so after 4 years of terrible brush fires in our area, this year was a pretty calm fire season. And just when we thought, you know, it was safe to sigh relief, you know, late August or early September, I can't remember which, we got a fire. We were out of town at the time, and we were coming back into town, and we're looking out over the dam. You know, we can see kind of where we live from about 6-7 miles off, and there's this red stuff all over the place up on the hill. And we smelled the smoke and we thought, wow, there's a fire. And when we got down real close to town, when we were only about a mile from home, the state patrol had closed the highway. We couldn't make that last mile to our house. And we thought it was pretty serious. We had another couple with us, so we went to their home for a while and finally made some phone calls down to where we lived, and they said, oh, the traffic's moving now. So we went home, and it seems that the fire was really, really close to town, but the firemen had a backfire going, and it was not a problem, not as much as we had thought. They didn't even evacuate the town. So that was kind of scary, but they got that fire out pretty quickly, so we didn't have any smoke or any hassles of that this year. So it was a good year as far as fires go. We didn't get our garden in quite as early as we wanted to, which is typical of us, but we had a great garden. We had lots of tomatoes, lots of beans, cukes for pickling, zucchinis, of course. And we've got carrots and beets in the ground still. We have lots to be thankful for, and we're grateful that we have, you know, good health, and we're financially able to make it here to Grand Junction for another feast. We're very grateful for that. I think that all of us realize and understand that the feast foreshadows an incredible future event with Jesus returning, saints resurrecting, and Satan restrained, allowing a period of prosperity and abundance. Now, even though this big event is a pivotal point in God's plan for human salvation, there is also meaning and lessons for us today. You and me, who are keeping the feast of 2016 right here in Grand Junction, Colorado. On the way to the millennium, we don't want to miss what God has to teach us today and each and every day of the feast. God teaches us in many ways, and what usually comes to mind is through sermons, the written word, prayer and meditation. But God also teaches us through the brethren, especially in the setting of fun, relaxation, camaraderie that we can experience here at the feast. I heard it said many times that when businesses go to seminars, training seminars and such, that the real learning comes after the speaker, the presenter sits down and the social hour starts, with a few drinks and everybody getting together. And I've experienced that too at a few times that I've gone. People get together, they share experiences, they talk about their work experiences and stuff. And that's when whatever the guy was talking about during the seminar, that's when that gets implemented and kind of they put a real life spin to it and you can understand it better. So today I'd like to focus on the here and now of the feast with the goal of all of us to make this feast, the best it can be. We know from Leviticus 23 that God commands the keeping of the feast. But like all of God's commands, I'm not going to turn there, by the way. Like all of God's commands, it's rooted in love. It is not intended to be a burden. Just as God made the Sabbath for man to give us rest and time to strengthen our relationship with Him, so too the feast is for our benefit. It's a time for fun, a time for relaxation, fellowship, good food and drink, enjoyment, praise, and thankfulness. Thankfulness to God for the blessings He's given during the past year. And even if it's been a year of many trials, we should still be able to find those blessings mixed in there. We should search them out and be thankful. Of course, we should be thankful all year long. But this is a special opportunity without so many distractions. A slice of time given to us from God to shut out the cares of the world, your job, your home, your finances, your worries and concerns. A time to disconnect. An opportunity to unplug. To not be reachable or accountable. To be focused on God's words and His plan. God loves us. He wants us to enjoy. Let's turn to Deuteronomy 16, verse 13 to start. Deuteronomy 16, verse 13. I'm reading from the NIV translation. Celebrate the Feast of Tabernacles for 7 days after you have gathered the produce of your threshing floor and your wine press. Now, notice it says, celebrate the feast. Now, in the King James, it says, observe the feast. But I think you can tell by the context of the next couple of verses that it is a celebration. It is it isn't just attend the feast, and it certainly isn't endure the feast, but it's celebrate the feast. So celebrate the Feast of Tabernacles for 7 days. Verse 14, be joyful at your feast, you, your sons and daughters, your men, servant, maidservants, and the Levites, the aliens, the fatherless, and the widows who live in your towns. For 7 days, celebrate the feast of the Lord your God at the place He will choose. For the Lord your God will bless you in all your harvest and in all the work of your hands, and your joy will be complete. Keeping the feast is mentally, physically, and spiritually good for us. It's especially easy to see that when you think of the mostly agrarian society that existed back when the first feast was first instituted. Farming isn't easy now. Back then, I can only imagine how strenuous and time-consuming it must have been. I do have a little bit of experience in farming. Judy probably didn't know that. When I was in high school, I had a part-time job, summer job, working in a car wash. Paid $1 an hour. It's kind of a semi-automatic car wash. You'd drive the car up, they'd vacuum it out, it'd go into the washer and it, you know, the brushes and all that stuff, the streams of water. And then other young men would use wash mitts, and they'd go all over the car, even after it'd been brushed. And then it would go through the blower, blow some of the water off, and a couple guys would jump in the car, and one would clean the back windows, one would clean the front windows. And then after it got completely out of the building, then another couple guys would take towels and wipe it all down, get all the water off. It was really kind of the Cadillac of car washes at that time, and it really got it clean. I mean, they didn't miss anything. If the front end of the car was buggy, they had a steam gun that would soften that up, and the washers would get it clean. And if it wasn't good enough, they'd run it through one more time. So that didn't happen very often. But I think it was the second year I was working for the car wash. And one of my fellow workers said, hey, I heard that this farmer out here needs some people to hoe weeds. And I don't remember what this plant, you know, what his crop was. But and they pay $1.10 an hour. You know, so, wow, a 10-cent raise, and it was going to be 8 hours a day. Now, I don't know how long it was going to be 8 hours a day, but I thought, wow, you know, I could really make some money. Now, this is teenage thinking now, and no offense to any of our teenagers, but, you know, I thought, wow, I could make some money. And so I told him, yeah, I'll go out there. And here again, teenage thinking. I told the car wash, adios, I'm quitting. And one of the reasons, you know, that I was thinking that was the car wash was kind of iffy. You know, if it started out a cloudy day, they didn't want you to come in. I mean, there was no real regular hours. I think there was, you know, they would open it up and a couple of guys would be there, but they would wait until sun came out and people started coming in and they got swamped, and they'd call up on the phone. And I can remember the woman that, she was an older woman. Everybody called her Ma because she was the mother of the man that ran the place. And she'd call up and say, hello, can you come? That's it. You know, you knew who it was, of course, but yeah, I can come. Yeah. And it always seemed like, well, okay, the best days were when it's when you like to be off. You know, you like to be out running around, but no, it's time to go work. So anyway, I went out to hoe some weeds. I was so naive. I didn't ask anybody anything. I went out there. I think I probably had short sleeves on. I didn't have a hat. I didn't bring water. And so we went out. They gave me a hoe, you know, and went out there. And there's these old men, you know. And I'm thinking, this shouldn't be hard. I can keep up with them. And I don't know how old they were. They might have been 50 for all I know. But to me, they looked like they were probably 70. And so we started hoeing, you know. And they're getting further and further ahead of me, you know, working along. And they'd get up there maybe 20, 30 yards ahead of me, and they'd stop. And they'd lean on their hoe, and they'd reach in their back pocket, pull out a file, file their hoe, you know, maybe talk a little bit, take a swig of water, and then off they'd go, even before I caught up with them. Well, I'm making this an awful long story, but I worked until noon, went in where they had lunch, picked up my lunch, went to my car, and drove home. That was my extent of farming. And I know by that, and probably by other things, that is a tough, it's a tough occupation. And it's kind of interesting. I, about, you know, end of the month, May the 1st of the month, I got a check for $4.40. I didn't care whether I got that or not at that point. So back then, with all the preparation of the soil, the planting of the seed, the tending of the crops, and harvesting, plus taking care of livestock, the people could really appreciate the end of harvest celebration that the feast affords. Most of us don't work nearly as hard physically as they did then, but I'm guessing that people need a break from the stress of working today, from the mental stress of living and working in this modern society that we do, even more so than the ones that work physically hard. Times change, but God doesn't. We still need the feast. God said that we should enjoy the time. Remember, whatever your heart desires. And He set up a plan to make it happen. Let's turn to Deuteronomy 14, verse 22. Not far from where I was. In Deuteronomy 14, verse 22, says, "Be sure to set aside a tenth of all that your fields produce each year. Eat the tithe of your grain, new wine, and oil, and firstborn of your herds and flocks in the presence of the Lord your God at the place that He will choose as a dwelling for His name." We're going to verse 27. "So that you may learn to revere the Lord your God always. But if that place is too distant and you have been blessed by the Lord your God and cannot carry your tithe because the place where the Lord will choose to put His name is so far away," and that's what we all do now. We all have money rather than livestock or whatever. "Then exchange your tithe for silver and take the silver with you and go to the place the Lord your God will choose. Use the silver to buy whatever you like, cattle, sheep, wine, or other fermented drink, or anything you wish. Then you and your household shall eat there in the presence of the Lord your God and rejoice. And do not neglect the Levites living in your towns, for they have no allotment or inheritance of their own." So God set up the second tithe so that we would have an easier way of getting to the feast and rejoicing at the feast because of what we had saved through the year. Now, I've never met a Levite in my town, but I think the verse could safely be extended to include anyone desiring to attend the feast that has little or no income. That way, all of us can enjoy the feast and rejoice together. When Judy and I attended our first feast in Squaw Valley, we didn't know what to expect. We'd been married 3.5 years. The first year of our marriage, I was still in the Air Force and wasn't making very much in the military. And the other 2.5 years, I was starting a new job, so we tended to be fairly frugal. Our first daughter was about 1.5 years old. We've been saving for the feast the whole year. But when we were more than halfway through the feast, the only money we'd spent so far was on lodging, gasoline to get there, and some food and snacks. It was hard to loosen up after being in the frugal mode for so long. Not long, but for all of our married life. Finally, the couple we were sharing housing with told Judy, "Why don't you just buy a book or a toy for your daughter?" You know, so we had difficulty at first grasping the concept of spending that second tithe for our enjoyment to help picture the coming millennium. We had trouble with that. We couldn't really see that it was for us to spend, and then we could picture, you know, the coming millennium, time of prosperity and peace. To be truthful, I still have trouble buying gifts for people. I can easily pick up a tab when we're eating out, but trying to decide on a gift and then shopping for it, it's not me. It's something I really need to work on. I understand the concept now, but still, I'm not practicing it. So we are encouraged to enjoy whatever our hearts desire. But really, we get the most pleasure by giving someone else what their heart desires. The feast is a golden opportunity to be generous and a blessing to others. I certainly see that at this feast site. And it's contagious. You know, we have been to other feast sites since we have attended first here. And this, the love and concern and the outgoingness here is just incredible. The other feast site, I don't want to badmouth it, but it just didn't have the same feel. There was groups, factions. I mean, people were halfway friendly, but it was, you know, kind of cliquish or tight or something like that. It's just not the togetherness that I see here at this feast. So it is. It's contagious. Everyone who attends adopts the attitude of care and concern and love for one another. We can extend that same love to the people in town who serve us by being generous with tips and friendly and outgoing in our encounters. We should always make a positive impact on anyone we deal with. They will appreciate us all the more. A fellow church member said to us long ago that she liked to double her tips while she was at the feast. Of course, I think we were probably at 10% back then rather than 15%, but still, double her tips while she's at the feast because she wanted to be an example to the people that were serving us and let them know, you know, what kind of people we were, who we were here, you know, just give them something to think about, you know, because, you know, that gets their attention. She wanted those people to know there was something different about the people that were visiting there for 8 days. I think it's pretty well established that we are to rejoice in the fellowship at the feast. For some people traveling a long distance, it might be fun and beneficial to travel together, to stop at the same places to eat or stay the night. I have a mental picture of the children of Israel when they were traveling from home to the feast site and back. Let's take a look at Luke 2, verse 41 through 46. Luke 2, verse 41 through 46. My mental picture of people traveling is, you know, kind of, I'm thinking that the pathway, the roadway that they're traveling is not real wide. So they're maybe three or four abreast, kind of strung out for a long ways, families kind of together, families and friends, and you know, just and talking as they go, fellowshipping, just enjoying the trip as well as making the trip to the feast. Now, in Luke 2, this is talking about a trip from Nazareth to Jerusalem. This is talking about the Passover. However, it would be the same trip, traveling from Nazareth to Jerusalem for the feast, if they were going to do that. And every year his parents went to Jerusalem. This is Jesus' parents, to Jerusalem for the feast of the Passover. When he was 12 years old, they went up to the feast according to the custom. After the feast was over, while his parents were returning home, the boy Jesus stayed behind in Jerusalem, but they were unaware of it. Thinking he was in their company, they traveled on for a day. So there, it makes me feel like they were strung out quite a ways, you know, that they would miss him. I mean, there must have been a lot of people and a fairly good string. And I can just imagine what it looks like. I think it paints a pretty good picture when Jacob was going back to his home and he meets Esau. And, you know, he purposely strung things out a little bit further there with his flocks and then his, you know, different wives and so on and so forth. But I just have a mental picture of it being all strung out like that. Okay, thinking he was in their company, they traveled on for a day. Then they began looking for him among the relatives and friends. When they did not find him, they went back to Jerusalem to look for him. After 3 days, they found him. Okay. Now, it had to be at least a day's travel because they hadn't got home by the time that they found him. And there is, I looked on the map, and it looks to me like Nazareth is about 65 miles from Jerusalem as a crow flies. It's about 100 miles by the highway that they have now. And my guess is it took at least 3 days and nights to make that trip. And I bet it took even longer than that. So they had a lot of time before and after the feast, the fellowship. It must have been a really nice time. And, of course, most of us now are traveling in our cars, and we want to get there as fast as possible. Zip, zip, you know. Of course, it's nice to make side trips, you know, it is. But, you know, we're always in a hurry, it seems like, and we don't have that opportunity that like they had then, to fellowship, like would be nice. I said I wanted to focus on the here and now, but I would like to stray a little bit into the future. Maybe you've already done this a few times, but try to imagine a world, a physical world, say, even, where there was no stealing. Okay. And think about all the things that would change if nobody would steal from another. Okay, no locks on doors. Might be a little bit of a savings on the cost of a door. Same on windows. What about the cost of police? You know, investigating break-ins, car thefts, so on and so forth. Do you ever get tired of carrying keys around? I do. Think of all the ways that life would change. How about passwords? Do you like trying to memorize all these passwords for everything? And that's for security. You know, it's What a different world it would be if nobody stole. And that's just one small thing that is, maybe not a small thing, but it's one of the Ten Commandments anyway, that is going to be changed. It's kind of nice to think about it sometimes, how different it could be. I've been kind of dancing around, I think, and I don't know if I've really made my point clear. But my main point is that we are physical human beings. And we derive pleasure from physical activities. And God wants us to enjoy those pleasures. And He wants us to enjoy those here. So, He wants us to enjoy the fruits of our labor. So, let's remember that the feast points to the future events that usher in an era that is so superior to anything that humans have experienced. We can't really fully comprehend the magnitude of the change, the amount of the improvement over the physical carnal life. But at the same time, we should live somewhat in the moment and enjoy what the physical feast has to offer.